Center for Modern Public Leadership. Rabbi Kreppel will be moderating this evening's program. I'd like to welcome our wonderful panelists and thank them for agreeing to participate in tonight's program. To my immediate left is my friend and teacher and a member of our community, Jeff Schwartz. Jeff has been the Chief Executive Officer and President of Timberland Co. since June of 1998. He is also a trustee of CityEarth, a very important social justice program for post-high school and collegiate age students, young people in our country. He has been a leader and a model of both social entrepreneurship and also corporate responsibility movement. I believe, as you'll probably say, I won't steal any of your lines, that business can do well and do good at the same time, and that is what he has aspired to model and has indeed done so, and it's a real great honor to have Jeff here with us and to learn from him. To his left is Rabbi Ari Weiss, who is the founding director of Uri L'Tzedek. Uri L'Tzedek is a Orthodox social justice organization that through education and social action campaigns tries to make a difference here in America with, again, galvanizing young people, in particular for this. Rabbi Weiss is a graduate. He has Nika from Yeshiva Kobei Torah Rabbinical School in New York. He is a graduate in and has a master's degree from Yeshiva University. His BA is in philosophy and religion, and his master's degree is also in Jewish philosophy. In April of 2010, Rabbi Weiss was selected as a Joshua Venture Group Fellow, which is a very prestigious honor bestowed upon Jewish agencies that show particular promise for social change. And to his left is our social activist scholar in residence, Diana Ginsberg, who is the executive director of the Ma'agle Tzedek, Circles of Justice, which is an Israeli NGO that promotes social action campaigns to create a more just Israeli society inspired by Jewish values. She's also one of the initiators of SIAC, a network of Jewish social justice and environmental professionals. She studied at Columbia University, thereafter making Aliyah in 2002. Her MA is in Jewish education from Hebrew University, and it has been an extraordinary experience and real pleasure to have learned from her and with her this entire Shabbat here at Congregation Shari Sila. We're coming to Purim, and my favorite line and the most powerful line in my opinion in the Megillah is when Mordechai says to Esther, when she's nervous and hesitant about assuming the responsibility of approaching Ahasuerus and pleading for her people, Mordechai says to her, "Don't think that you'll be able to escape whatever our collective destiny is. And don't think that you'll be able to hide and assume your responsibility. And who knows, precisely, maybe the wheels of destiny, so to speak, or more Jewishly, divine providence, has placed you in this position of power and influence, precisely so that you can make a difference." And that really is what we're here about tonight. We are a community of learning. We're a community of action, of cohesiveness. We're a community that is extraordinary in its particularism and in the essence of those values of our particular community. And yet one of the strengths of our community is one of our particular values is our care and compassion for others within the Jewish community, but also our universal obligations. And so particularism, our sense of belonging to a smaller, close-knit community, actually is a very powerful force in challenging us and reminding us of our responsibility and galvanizing us and really allowing us to leverage that communal power towards the greater whole, the universal whole. And so when we all got together on, you know, in a virtual meeting on the email to discuss how we can best use all of this wonderful talent and learning that we have in front of us this evening, we spoke about how we can have a session about Orthodox Judaism, the Orthodox Jewish community, and social justice. And it's a very noble topic, a topic that we can always do better at, and hopefully, and I have full confidence, we will learn a great deal from our panelists, and we will be inspired to take this evening and these lessons to even more and intensive and greater action. So I'm going to now turn over the lectern to my good friend and colleague, Rabbi Aryeh Klapper, and ask him to begin our evening.
Shavuot Tov. I want to thank our Nathaniel very, very much, my dear friend and colleague, Nathaniel, for arranging this evening and for inspiring it and for giving me the opportunity to moderate. I'm really looking forward to an event that will serve as a moral catalyst. We have the Jewish community, not just in Boston, but generally, to reframe interest in social justice as an essential element of what it means to be an Orthodox Jew. Just a word on format this night. The way we're going to structure this is I'm going to first ask sequentially three questions, which will be answered in rotating alphabetical order by each of the panelists. After each had an opportunity to answer each of the questions, I'll probably ask one follow-up to each of them. The goal is to keep the answers short, so that whole unit of the program will take about 45 minutes. And when that's done, we'll open the floor. We'll open the questions from the floor, and I hope that those will be stimulating. I'm confident they will be. With that, the first question I'm going to ask is, I'm going to ask this first to McKinsey, what is the relationship between your social justice work and commitment and your personal identity as a Torah observant Jew?
When I first encountered the MAGA, the Aesthetic Circles of Justice, the organization that I now head, it fit really well for me because it combines three things that I am deeply passionate about: Torah, social justice, and Israel. And while I describe those three things as being discrete items, over the last 9.5 years since I've been living in Israel, and over the last 6 years since I've been involved in the organization which I now head, it is harder and harder for me to detach those three things. When I was in Aliyah 9.5 years ago, people asked me the question, why would a young person from New York choose to pick herself up and move halfway across the world in the midst of the Second Intifada? And the answers that I gave at the beginning were pat answers. I grew up in a Zionist family. This was something I wanted to do. My younger siblings stole my thunder. But the more that people ask me that question, the more that I realize that inherent in that question itself was the answer. Because as so long as it wasn't clear to everybody in my own community in Woodmere, so long as it wasn't clear to everybody in my new community in Jerusalem why a young person would want to pick herself up and move to Israel, so long as it was not clear that that was the most model society that basically embodied the very core values that I saw as being critical to a society in the land of Israel, that is why I moved. And that is very much formed a part of my own sort of personal narrative. A dear friend and mentor, a woman who is the age of my parents and made Aliyah about 20 years before me, and is the founder of Yachad, an organization in North America that mainstreams people with disabilities into the larger community, and subsequently got very involved in working in Israel in the field of mainstreaming people with disabilities, particularly in the Arab sector, is often posed the question why she, as a religious Jew, would do the kind of work she does. And her response is, how could I, as a religious Jew, not do the work that I do. And so in terms of my own personal narrative, looking at the work that I do, particularly given the place where I have chosen to call home, is those three things, current social justice and Israel, that are all interconnected and intertwined. And I think that while I share a lot in common with the panelists here, one of the major differences that is between the work that I do and the work of the panelists here is whereas a lot of the organizations in America that are dealing with Jewish social justice values are looking at the responsibility of a minority population towards other minority populations. And I think for me and for the current values that I am trying to put into place, I'm looking at the responsibility of a majority population to minority populations, both Jewish and non-Jewish, living in our midst. And that makes the discussion slightly different in terms of the place I'm coming from.
And thank you for allowing me to participate with such powerful leaders. I will work most of my day in a very different world. It's, I might call it the Kema world, right, as opposed to the Torah world. So, and sometimes the only, so I find myself as a person who aspires to be a Torah observant Jew, I find myself in a world far away from Israel, and I find myself in a world that's far away, at least on its surface, from Torah values. Not to say it's the values are absent, just that when you look around, this is it is Kansas, it's not Oz, when I go to work in the morning. And I struggle with that because the question is who you are versus what you do. And it was Rabbi Sennett who exposed me to the Gemara in Brachot, the Mamet Hay, where this conversation exists in a very powerful way. And there the conversation is between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, and the question between them is, how can you fulfill the requirement of, in that case, is posed in agricultural case, how can you sow at the time of sowing and winnow at the time of winning and thresh and thread? What will become of Torah? And to me it was a very painful thing to look at because I thought, yeah, that's exactly what I'm worried about. And Rabbi Shimon said the key to understanding that was the bracha that we say every morning before we learn words of Torah. We pray that we should immerse ourselves in words of Torah. And the rabbi pointed out to me, which was an incredible finish for me, it's a big deal, that we only finish bracha once a day. We don't say it every time we study text, and I work very hard to study text during the day. I learn literally every single morning by myself early, but even during the day I try to kind of duck out of the moment and look at text just to reassure myself of who I am as opposed to what I do. The Rabbi Samuel says that's a lovely thing if you want to look at text by all means do, but live your business life against the standard law, so to be very Torah, and then it doesn't matter what you're doing, it matters how you're doing what you're doing, and you can be a Torah-centered Jew in a difficult business negotiation, as we saw Abraham Avinu negotiating with the Hittites through maintaining his dignity. We have a myriad of examples of how you can live in the world of Kemach and still be about Torah, and My response to the question, how do you go out into the world and do things that are just pure and simple commerce things, how do you do that and be okay with yourself? And although it's a constant struggle and one I'm never going to be either pleased with or let alone satisfied with, that standard is my budget as I make my annual one.
It's really, really good to be here. I was here for one Shabbat in May 2009 with my good friend and colleague, Rabbi Shmuley Hinkowitz, who was an intern here, who actually just became a katan on Friday. So it's really a pleasure to be here and with my teacher, Rabbi Ari Clapper, and thank you, Rabbi Samuels, for extending the invitation. I'd like to take this question and think about my own personal narrative for just a moment. I'm a first-generation American. My father was born in Budapest in June 1945. My grandmother was pregnant with my dad in Budapest, Ghetto. My mom was born in November 1926 in Kassel, Germany, or Kassel, Germany, in a DP camp. My grandparents were the only two people from their town that survived the Shoah. They saw each other, they got married, and about a year later, my mother was born. When I was growing up, I thought that all elderly people spoke with a foreign accent and had a tattoo, unfortunately, on their arm. And what I took from that is an impression that there's real evil in the world, and that what we should do and, is try and as much as possible to try fighting that, to fight evil in the world. And I did have a language to think about that until I was much, much older. This is the second incident from my childhood. I have a close relative who is adopted from South America. So ethnically, she's not white. She's North Dutch, but he would be Hispanic. He doesn't consider himself that at all. But unfortunately, other people in the Orthodox community that I grew up in New York did. And throughout his childhood, they said really horrible and mean things to him. And again, I didn't have the language to think about racism and discrimination within the Orthodox community until much later. But that was something that was very traumatic for him, and much to a much lesser degree to me, but it was something that really, really stayed with me growing up. I grew up in the Orthodox New York community, went to yeshiva my entire life at the Orthodox Moshe, YCQ, Yeshiva University High School for Boys, Yeshiva Harzion in Israel, Yeshiva University for college. It probably wasn't until I was 26 or 27 until I heard the phrase social justice uttered within like the Orthodox community. And I had already encountered some social justice thinkers, in some of my philosophy work that I studied philosophy in school, but I didn't hear that language. I mean, I heard bits and pieces. One place that was discussed actually was in Rabbi Clapper's store of David Josh, where I had the pleasure of learning, but within that Orthodox community that I participated in and I'm proud to be affiliated with, that language just wasn't there. It was more of a negative language. So when I finished Kovei Torah in 2007, I didn't know exactly what I would do. I had a feeling I wouldn't be a stellar rabbi. I wouldn't have a congregation. That wasn't exactly for me. My good friend, Rabbi Engelis, had started reading the Tzedek, and we had a conversation, and about a year later, I decided to join the organization as the first employee. And for me, this is what it means to be an Orthodox Jewish. And I aspire to be an Orthodox leader, but to care passionately about social justice. I think that one of the main messages of the Torah, repeated time and time again, is this notion of justice and ethics. And ethics as a first philosophy. Rabbi Emanuel Rapin, Aloha Shalom, writes somewhere, one of his papers, that Judaism teaches us first and foremost an empathetic justice. An empathetic justice, a justice based on empathy. We know what it's like to be the ger. We know what it's like to be the stranger. And in all our institutions, we should make sure that we are accountable to make sure that no one suffers and is exploited the way that we were in the tribe. And I think the project, and I'm sort of like looking at some of the questions which I'll return to, the project, I think, of the Orthodox and the Orthodox community is to create just institutions which don't exploit and oppress.
Second question asked is, what is the relationship between your social justice work and commitment to your life within identification with the Orthodox Jewish community? I think that the beginning of your answer to those questions has been already, so I'm going to ask to deepen that. I guess I will just pick up on something that the wife said, and actually the knowledge is quite on. I'm very glad to have the wife here on the panel with us today, that former participant that I think I started his administrative career. That I already mean as administrative recommended. I read recently a Dilbert cartoon, which involved an interview between a Dilbert and a potential employee, in which his opening line is, we believe very strongly here in the principle of employee empowerment. And the response of the interviewee is that if you happen to say you believe in the principle, you don't really have it. Anytime you have to talk about it is not natural. So the question is, to what extent, the fact that we have an event like this raises the question as to what extent social justice really is natural currently within the Orthodox Jewish community. But ask that the panelists answer this question in the context of that framework. Right, how do you perceive, By having stated how strongly social justice is your own identification with orthodox students, right, how does that fit with your identification with and relationship within the orthodox Jewish community? I think we said we would start it with the first.
I struggle with this question because I was in Los Angeles last week. I was invited to make a presentation at TED. And I was at Davos before that, the World Economic Forum, they made presentations there too. And in elite circumstances, and I understand that it's a weird, that's a bizarre world. It is. But it's a bizarre and empty world in the context of orthodoxy. And I mean it this way. It's not just that you have to bring your own food. We can figure that out. But I'm surprised in my social justice world, not in the Jewish community. I have a career that relates to social justice in the Jewish world and in Israel. I'm talking about in the world of engaged democracy. I don't find Orthodox Jews in the world of engaged democracy. Now, it could be that I'm looking for love in all the wrong places. So you should hear humility in my assertion, not criticism. You should hear an only observation. But I go out into the world of social justice in the business world and am very mindful of the fact that I'm the only guy wearing a kippah and tent. And I'm not proud of that. I'm more uptight about that. Me wearing kippah is my business. Just that there's nobody else wearing kippah bothers me, and I'll tell you why. It's just, I know we're a small population, the so-called Orthodox community, but we have we're a concentrated population of goodness, by assertion, by value, by point of view, and so I expect, and maybe it's an unfair thing to expect, I expect to see us overrepresented in the world of social justice. It's not that I require encountered Jews in the world of social justice. I do. So to hear that share our strength, the current crop of social entrepreneurs who run social justice organizations from Teach America, I know all these people, and I've grown up in the last 20 years. And so there's plenty of Jews. They're just, so it's not that Jews aren't interested. They are. It's just the Orthodox community, if you use a kippah as a badge or a signal to say, hello, I'm an Orthodox Jewish guy, it's just, I see a dislocation, so I have to be more self-consciously aware or assertive about the fact that, you know, I'm the guy wearing a kippah. It's troubling to me. I wish that there were more more visible Jewish presence in the social justice world that I hang out. Like I said, I'm not going to be criticizing anybody. I'm saying, why don't you do this? Because that's not my point. I'm just saying, I'm reading back to you. You go into the world of social justice in the environmental movement in the United States, in the human rights movement, in the value chain world. In the world that I run in, I find Jews, I don't find Orthodox Jews, and I find that disconcerting and lonely.
So I had the pleasure of being at Brandeis University over Shabbat, and around, I would say, 10 o'clock last night, I was speaking in only to about 25-30 renditions, and someone asked the question, why is it that Orthodox Jews, very similar to what Mr. Schwartz was just saying, why is it that Orthodox Jews are not involved in social justice? Like, why? And, like, I put that to the students, and, like, they were actually trying to grapple with it. And I think there are historical reasons why. I think the trauma of the Shoah, of the Holocaust is still very operable within the community. I think that there are theological reasons why, that there are some Jewish sources that, you know, try to distinguish between Jews and Gentiles, and there's often a theology of Jews first, and I think that there are sociological reasons as well. But I'm still grappling with it. I don't have a real clear answer. I know it's there. I know that the Orthodox community is tremendously generous to people within the community. I've heard that in Teaneck, New Jersey, there's a gemach for Cleek, that if, you know, if someone doesn't have cleats and can't afford cleats, there are places where you can get cleats for Little League, for people's children. But that doesn't extend to people that are not inside the community. I think that's something that we can continue to change. Stanley Cavell, who is a professor of philosophy, I think he's emeritus now at Harvard University, has a line in his wonderful book, The Pain of Reason, that community are people I take responsibility to speak for and who take responsibility to speak for me. Like, that's what community is at its core. It's the ability to speak for other people in the community and letting them speak for yourself. Letting other people speak for yourself. And I'm proudly Orthodox too. And as I've developed as a leader and running the site together with some other wonderful people, like, I'm trying to take responsibility for Orthodoxy and to put this at the forefront of the agenda. To deepen what I was saying before, there's the Rambam, Maimonides says in the Guide of the Prophet, he says this in Book 3, Chapter 27, he says that the point of the whole Torah just about is, and this is a quote, the true law then, which we have already made clear as unique, namely the law of Moses our master, has come to bring us both perfection. I mean the welfare of the states of people in relations with one another through the abolition of reciprocal wrongdoing and through the acquisition of a noble and excellent character. That's sort of a mouthful, but what that boils down to me, it says, that it's about creating virtue in yourself and a just society. And once you're able to do that, once you are able to create virtue within yourself and the ethics within yourself and extend that and create a just society, then you can go to the next level, which is knowing God, Avat Hashem and Yirat Hashem, loving God and fearing God. And then he says that's the point of the entire Torah. The point of the Torah is creating virtue and justice and then knowing God. And I think one of the things Rebbe Sadek is trying to do is go back to that tradition, go back to the sources within Judaism, and then actually creating real change within the world.
First, the good news, not the bad news. The good news is that I actually think that in Israel, Rebbe Sadek and some of the organizations have succeeded in making serious inroads within the Orthodox community, bringing social justice values and rediscovering the inherent social justice values in the Torah and in Jewish tradition, in particular by some very sort of smart moves that were made in the early days of the organization by reaching out to garner widespread rabbinic support. And I think at the same point in time, when Rabbi Sedek at a certain point in its early history decided to branch outside of the Orthodox community, it succeeded in bringing Torah values to a secular Israeli public that had not had the opportunity to experience Torah values from a social justice lens previously. So I think that there is good news out there, and I'm happy to share that. The bad news is that I do identify particularly what Jeff said in terms of loneliness. Loneliness because even though we have made inroads in Israeli society, and I think that speaking in the language of social justice has become much more a part of certain elements of the Orthodox community, we still have a long way to go. And an even deeper loneliness when I come back to the communities that are so close to my heart here, I feel like what has become so much a part of my own DNA, and when I share that language, the eyes of people just glaze over because I'm speaking in words and people understand the words that I'm saying, but they don't understand the basic messages. When I speak to the non-Orthodox community and I talk about Israel's role in the pursuit of justice, that is very foreign. When I speak to the Orthodox community and I talk about social justice and working with both Jews and non-Jews in the state of Israel, that is equally foreign. And I think one other thing that's worth mentioning is that one of the fundamental distinctions that Rabbi Sedek likes to talk about, that I know that Rabbi Sedek talked about as well, is the distinction between acts of chesed, acts of loving kindness, and acts of tzedek, structural and systemic change. And one of the examples that I often give in terms of those two things is that 90% of the public space in Israel is not accessible to people with physical disabilities. If I, as an individual, come to a place that's not accessible, and together with me is a friend who is in a wheelchair, and I lift that person up so that that person can get in the door, that is an act of kindness. It is an act of loving kindness. It is a sacred act. It is a blessed act. It is a critical act. Otherwise, that person cannot get in the door. If, however, I, as a citizen of this country, ensure that the place is accessible from the get-go so that person does not have to rely on my good graces to get into the door, that is an act of tzedek, an act of justice. And I think that the Orthodox community, which is itself an act of chesed, and can serve as a tremendous example to non-Orthodox streams, often uses acts of chesed as an excuse for not pursuing acts of justice. And over the Shabbos table, sitting with Rabbi Samuels, I had the opportunity to share two group examples, which I'll share with you now. One is an Orthodox businessman who actually supports some of the work that we do. But when we approached him and said that many of the cleaning staff in the business that he runs are not receiving their minimum wage, his response was that on Hanukkah, he chooses every year a different cleaning person and refurbishes their apartment. That is an example of a person using an act of chesed as an excuse for a lack of justice. Another example, I sat at a campus hearing last year in which an Orthodox rabbi of a school that refused to accept Ethiopian children to his first grade class in a flagrant violation of Israeli law defended his school's position by saying that last year the school children and parents together had raised money to pay for a poor Ethiopian kid's shoes. Once again, using an act of chesed, a sacred act, as an excuse for a lack of justice. And I think if we try and figure out one of the issues, maybe it's that sort of things that we're doing that are good, that enable us to feel self-righteous and ignore some of the more systemic things we need to be pursuing.
The last pre-program question I'm going to ask is, what do you see as the major social justice responsibilities of Orthodox Jews in the next decade, both within our community and without our community? I think there's a negative response to this question and a positive response. Are we thinking about social justice as negative in the sense of combating suffering and oppression, and then positive, creating justice? So what do I mean? So in the negative sense, I think that a goal of Orthodox social justice in the next decade, and it'll probably take longer than the next decade, but really one of our goals should be is to end the corruption within Orthodox institutions. By looking within our gates first, and to say there's a lot of corruption out there. To give you one example, you probably all are aware of, is the largest kosher slaughterhouse in the country a couple of years ago. But I'll tell you something that's going on right now, which is food that you might be bringing in to your Shabbos table, to your Yom Tov table. Flam Appetizing, a major distributor, producer of hummus and palatim and pickles and things of the like, decided that they would stop paying pretty much overtime and minimum wage to a bunch of their workers. They thought they could do this because the workers were undocumented, which again, by the way, is very much against the law. That the issue of documentation is very different than whether you actually have to pay minimum wage and the like. So the workers decided, well, this is wrong and we want our wages, so we're going to organize. They were promptly fired. They still organized. They went to some lawyers, and they actually sued, and they got a judgment for about $260,000 against Found Advertising. Found Advertising had still refused to pay, and they would rather, instead of paying the $260,000, they would rather spend that money on lawyers, and just file motion after motion after motion. So at this point, these workers still haven't been paid. They're out of a job. And that's where we are right now. So they reached out to Ariel Senek. We brought workers within the Orthodox community, Queens College, to social justice being addressed that we have in our website. And then we started to act. So for the last bunch of Sundays, around 4 or 5 o'clock, we show up with some of the workers, some of the Lieutenant crews, some other supporters, and we pick it. First, we contact supermarkets on the Upper West Side, and we ask them to stop carrying Clown advertising, and there are some of their other products as well. And usually when we send the letter, that's ignored. But when 30 or 40 people show up with flyers right outside, then we were able then to have a dialogue with management. And there are many less supermarkets on the Upper West Side that are no longer carrying Clown advertising. And hopefully we hope to get to the point where this is starting to really hurt their bottom line, and they'll realize it's smarter. It's within their financial self-interest, forget about the religious or their moral self-interest, to go ahead and to pay out what they legally and rightfully owe these workers. So that's the case of the negative. Case of the positive of creating more social justice, I think, is the top of Yosha, our ethical field for kosher restaurants and supermarkets and bakeries. And here I'd like to say that we're really inspired by the amazing work that the Maghreb Tzedek has done with the top refugee social field in Israel, which is in hundreds and hundreds of places. The top of Yosha was launched about a year and a half ago now. It is now in 80 places or 80 kosher restaurants around the country. No place in Boston yet, but we're trying hard to change that. But New York City, Chicago, Maryland, and it basically rewards, it's a free of charge, it rewards restaurants for paying minimum wage, paying overtime, treating their workers with respect and dignity. We actually see this as a case of social entrepreneurship. We seek to actually reward financially restaurants that do the right thing. So there are many, in parallel of working with the restaurants, we work with Jewish organizations who spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars on food and on catering. And many Jewish organizations have a policy now where they're primarily, if not almost all the time, are from places that have the Tavi Yosher when they have, 100 of, people over for lunch and they have to cater that. The last thing I'll say is mentioned, Rabbi Samuels, when he introduced me, mentioned that we work a lot with the younger generation. And I'll just say a brief comment from my mother. In Shavuot 2008, I was home for Shavuot, and my mother had some friends over, and they asked me, what am I doing this summer? So I said, I'm going to Ghana with 15 college students, with American Jewish World Service as a group leader. And they're like, of course, the next question is, are there any Jews in Ghana? And my mother, I love my mother said, that's what this generation does. That's what this generation does. And I think that there's something really to that. I think that, even people who are younger than me, they grew up, they went to high school and college. They went to Darfur rallies. They heard again and again, never again, never again, never again. And then when it was happening, never again, they wanted to act. And they have this consciousness, this universal consciousness, this consciousness of globalization that our responsibilities extend beyond the Orthodox community and beyond the Jewish community. So we work often with colleges. I'd actually like to recognize Anoa, who is a junior or a senior at Brandeis, who's one of our summer fellows last year, who created a domestic violence brochure, which we sent to schools and synagogues around New York, which had resources if someone, Hashem, was in an abusive relationship. And what actually made this very real, and I was sitting in my office maybe a month ago, and a woman called me up from the Warriors community in Washington Heights, and she said she had received, she was in the family, she received this brochure, and she just wanted to thank me, because she unfortunately was in an abusive relationship, and she saw resources where she could get the professional help that she needed. And at that moment, all of the work became very real. That there are people who are suffering, and social justice is within our houses, it's out of our houses, and I just wanted to thank Noah for creating that brochure, which was saving this woman's life. So that's part of the agenda. This is a much larger conversation, and I'm glad to continue. I look forward to continuing the conversation if anyone is interested, maybe after the panel.
There are two things that I think that the Orthodox community should be working on internally, and two unique contributions that I think the Orthodox community has to the general queer social justice community. The two things internally are, first of all, making sure that every single Orthodox institution embodies the values that we espouse. That every shul, every school, every camp, every youth movement is inclusive to kids with disabilities, is an institution where individuals get fair wages, that meets a whole variety of values, and that we make sure to ensure that the core of our institution really reflects what we teach when we sit and learn together. That's the first. The second is on shifting the discourse and developing a shared language. If I spoke before about my inability to communicate, it's because the language that I have incorporated as part of my own mode of discourse is not a shared language. And it became very clear to me about 2 years ago or so when I was invited to B'nai David in Los Angeles, where a group of rabbis were interested in putting together an ethical certificate for Jewish-owned businesses, not just in the food industry, but all Jewish-owned businesses. And they were sitting around the table, and there were a couple of labor lawyers who were sitting there as well. And one individual turned to me and said, I don't understand. Why would I spend an additional 2 hours during my limited free time helping the two Mexican workers in the local Jewish-owned shoe store when I could spend those two very same hours filing class action suits and helping thousands of workers? And when that person asked a question, I realized that the ethical certification that, or the Zedek grants, the funded Zedek grants, and that group of Orthodox rabbis in Los Angeles wanted to grant, it's not just about civic compliance, because what it's really about is about changing the mode of discourse in our community. And what I responded to that individual then was, if it was only about compliance, then he's right. He should spend those 2 extra hours filing staff action suits. But if it is as a tool to make sure that when he goes to school on Shabbat and his kid goes to school during the week, and goes to after-school programming at the end of the day, but what they talk about is social justice values, then it is a worthwhile school. So internally, it's embodying those values we espouse and shifting the discourse. Externally, I think if we look at the Jewish social justice community, particularly in North America, but also in Europe, what we see are two things that to me are very absent to the Orthodox community in Israel. One is a real level of sophistication and depth in terms of dealing with a lot of Jewish texts that exists in certain topics, but given the level of knowledge in the Orthodox community could be playing a critical role in adding a level of depth to that conversation. And the second is to insert Israel back into that conversation. Earlier, as you just received, I reminded the group that the remainder of the verse, Tzedek, 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 Justice, Justice, you shall pursue, is the Nasikhiyad Yarakha Ta'arach Asher Hashem Elokecha, Lokecha Lerishta. Justice, justice you shall pursue, so that you may live and inherit the land that God has given you to inherit. Basically, in the very injunction to pursue justice, we see three things. God, justice, and the land of Israel. And I think the Orthodox community can serve a critical role in inserting that back into the Jewish social justice conversation.
I think what you said was spectacular, and so I have very little to add to it, except in this form. If you won't add to it, I'm just going to respond to it, because I think it should be spectacular. In the social justice world, where in my role as the Kenmuck guy, I'm considered a far from the mean CEO, meaning I'm the unusual, quirky CEO. With the activist world, they love me, except that if I were to point out to them that many of them have me on their boycott list also. They have a hard time sort of remembering that the environmental guy is also the Israel guy. And when those two things come together, it's a very awkward meeting. Right? We had activists in the building sometime right before Shabbat, very powerful environmental activists. And we had an incredibly constructive conversation about how, never publicly, this activist group and our company could work together, because that would disenfranchise their activism, but that's fine with me. And so, yeah, so they, now they found it to me, and they cut the office right away. I have a face for the back, so it works for me socially. All I wanted to say was, when you think about how orthodoxy shows up, or how Jewish orthodox values show up in an integrated sense, right, which, and as you described it beautifully, when they push me, they did, these activists, sort of explain why this matters to you, don't understand that. I don't say to them, Sorma Rabat is hope, because that wouldn't be, that would be the right language. But when I explain that, when I use text in gentle terms, everybody loves that. They should have a text that, if only it's not too particular, certainly not Hebrew, it's really lovely, it's even charming. But if it was Hebrew, and that got you tied over to the conversation that said, well, I know you're a Jew, but you're not one of those kind of Jews, right? It becomes a very awkward conversation. So in the world of social justice, if you ask me, it's over my pay grade. First thing is, I agree with you, we have to be the change we seek. And so if our community is corrupt in any place or form, it's the end of the conversation. You disenfranchise any other assertion you can make. The second thing is, why do we expect our children to understand this when we don't teach them this? And so I'm a volunteer at a school here in Brooklyn, and it's a school of Torah values, and it's a school of academic excellence. But there's no curriculum. There's a chesed committee, but there's no tzedek notion. And the fact that we don't insist on the language of tzedek, the way you describe the distinction between chesed and tzedek is powerful. We model chesed, we don't model tzedek. Tzedek is harder to model anyway, it's a longer story, and so it's a self-perpetuating conversation. So we teach chesed, it says we do chesed, and we wonder why we don't have a conversation about it. And then, if you go into the world of social justice, where the Jews are, right, and it's not about AGWS, but it is about AGWS, I don't understand the J in it. I'm going to be very controversial for saying that. If you look at the rest of the Jewish community, you look at the social justice stuff out there, it's called J, it isn't J, and by that I mean, there is no sacred text, there's no, and I'm not attacking AGWS, I'm not making a point. I'm making the point that if you go out in the world and you look at the social justice organizations that our kids, the Jewish kids that aren't Orthodox involved in, they say it's Jewish, but we don't talk to your sex, we're not just dropping the ball, we are failing to do our job. We're not discharging our responsibility. And the conversation says you can't talk text to kids that aren't connected. The kids that are a parking week is going on right now, right? Dana calls from Columbia to say there's checkpoints. Half of them are managed by Jews. And so the conversation about what to do about that, to me, I get a little uptight because I think we've got to be clear about what values we are trying to sell, and we're not ready to have a universal conversation, and so we've had a conversation with the Jews about particularism, and including very specifically issues of peoplehood and identity that relate to Israel. And so I always feel alone in the social justice world on two bases. One is because I often find I'm the guy with a hat on, and that keeps me warm but makes me uptight. And the other thing that it does make me uptight about is if they ever connect the notion of the hat to Israel, it becomes really nervous. And so I wish that internally in the Jewish community we could live the values that we need, and we could teach the values that we want our children to be able to carry with them when they go out into the world, and then absolutely in Ghana. I want Jewish kids to be everywhere in the world doing the right things. I just want, when I say I want Jewish kids in the world, I want kids to speak in Jewish tradition in the world. And I'm not saying Orthodox kids, I'm just saying Jewish values that they know what they are, so they can explain that it's not a cultural thing, it is a religious thing. I better stop.
Thank you.
I wanted to thank you very much for the powerful words, and the questions I'm going to ask are largely going to be asking each of you to address some of the challenges that the others have been. I want to say, first of all, I'm very proud. I think that one of the first practical outcomes of the real aesthetic campaign regarding slums was the Basin of Bumps is no longer tourist prominent. When we lunch and we eat, it's not necessarily a good tuna fish, if you're going to talk about tuna fish. But we're glad to do it. Our ethical life is full of sacrifice. We're glad to do it. I think it's a wonderful thing, and I'm very, very proud to have graduates of Metro and are going out to do these amazing things. The first question I could ask, and I'm going to pick up on the last thing that Kiswick said to Fiona, I think one of the concerns people have about orthodoxy and social justice, the two of them actually which are related, one is that people talk about the social justice community as a whole, and there's a fear of identification with broader communities that somehow you have to choose among identities. And so what I want to address that notion of how when one joins the social justice community as an Orthodox Jew, right, does that intensify one's identity? Right, does it, right, how does one, what happens when one finds oneself an Orthodox Jew not in agreement with portions of the rest of what the community of the Pusalia one is now strongly identified with? And I want to particularly frame that question in light of what both of you spoke about, which is how that relates specifically to Israel. It was a cause to live in America last year, and the Peter Baynard article which argued that support for Israel among young Jews was lessened because support for Israel is no longer identified with a liberal identity. A lot of controversy whether that was accurate or not, and whether there's a counter study out, but it wasn't true. But I think that one of the concerns people have is the feeling that if one identifies as a social justice person, and that becomes an alternate community identification which charges a whole set of commitments that the rest of the Orthodox Jewish community finds problematic aside from the issues of looking at ourselves in the mirror. So I'm wondering how you would suggest that.
That is a tough question. I think that there is a distinction between assimilating and incorporating aesthetic values in the institutions that we run, which I think is the outset, the ABCs that need to be done, and an identification with a larger Jewish social justice community. And I think that those are two separate things, and I would think we would be very remiss if we weren't to do the ABCs for fear of larger identification issues. I would actually take what you say a couple steps further, because as someone who has spent the last 2 years building an international network of Jewish social justice and environmental professionals, I think that there are certain very worrying trends in the Jewish social justice community. I think that in certain aspects, the Jewish social justice identity is an identity that is an alternative, not a complementary identity, to A, religious identity, B, nationalistic slash Zionist identity. And so I find that very worrying. That notwithstanding, I think all that we said before is still the case. I think there are increased numbers of A, young Orthodox Jews who grew up in a different generation, in a different world than their parents and grandparents, and feel a universal calling in a way that their parents and grandparents grew up in a context that didn't enable them to feel that, and we have to recognize that among many young Orthodox Jews. And I think we have a responsibility to the non-Orthodox Jews that increasingly are attracted to Jewish social justice as a portal for Jewish identity. And I think it is the responsibility of the Orthodox community, like I said earlier, to make sure that the Jewish piece of the conversation and the Israel piece of the conversation is there in the conversation. But the trends are worrying, and they exist, and they are out there. And I think the Orthodox community can play a critical role in mitigating that.
Thank you. I'm going to ask the next question, Kelly White, which is that there is often a tendency, especially when we bemoan the fracturing of American Orthodoxy, to say, well, why don't we try and work together as much as we can on the things we agree about, rather than and try and minimize divisions. I teach in Berkeley High School, for example. So let's try and, you know, we have to dive in separately, because we have conflicts about Matista or about Nisa or issues like that. We'll dive in separately, but at least when it comes to issues of justice in general, of the Nadama Fabero, of interpersonal relations, then you should be able to work collectively. And why would we wish to introduce